say. If you're afraid, then you come along with me. And I know what you came here to do. Coming to you live from Browns headquarters in Berea, Ohio, this is Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
The Browns dropped a heartbreaker, if there can be such a thing, in the preseason game. No, there
11-10?
Can't be. 11-10.
It's like a good baseball score.
It's a great base. It's like a video game baseball yeah. score. A great a lot of offense. Chicks love the long ball. Well, the Browns dropped the game 11-10 to the Buffalo Bills, but some good and certainly some bad. And we certainly want to get into all of that with you guys here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. The Kid will be joining us shortly in studio. We're going to hear from Tom Withers. We're going to hear the postgame commentary from Josh McCown, from, of course, head coach Mike Pettine and Johnny Manziel. But overall, my first thought was this. Josh McCown, the reason that he's bounced around the league the way that he has is because of a lack of consistency. And we saw in one game a microcosm of that. Take away the two interceptions, he was 7 of 8 on the day. Solid, made some good throws, including a very nice third down throw to Rob Houser. The first interception, tried to throw into a tight window. The ball actually got to Gary Barnes, which amazed me more than anything. Popped up off his shoulder pad, was intercepted. The second one.
Was that a catchable ball?
I don't know. There was, it just shouldn't have been thrown.
Okay.
Should throw it away. The second one, he's got Andrew Hawkins one-on-one with a DB way down the field and throws a jump ball. You don't throw a jump ball to a guy like Andrew Hawkins. Maybe he had a flashback and he thought he was throwing it to, I don't
know.
Jeffrey, Marshall, Vincent Jackson, Mike Evans. All acceptable. Andrew Hawkins, not acceptable. So that was a poor decision there, and you want to see him do a better job taking care of the football. The ground game got going, which was good to see on some level, but was it really a good ground game?
No.
No.
I wrote out the stats. You know, what it ended up being for, you know, for Crow and West on their carries, it ended up being 16 of 56.
Right, which is still not where you want to be.
No.
4 yards a carry would be 64.
What was encouraging to me about our run game, and I'll ask that question back after I state this, is what got me excited by both West and Crowell was when they got into the open field. When there was that crease and they were able to make that play. Those like that 12, that 15, that four, those 14-yard chunk runs is an NFL rushing attack. You know, there was times where you got four and you got down, you got three and you got down, but then there's the 12, there's the 14, there's the, you know, those 11-yard runs. That's what I love, you know, and that's what we need four of in a game. You know, one's going to go for 19, one's going to go for 25, one's going to be 9, 11, 12, but then you're going to have your one, your negative three, your four, your three, your two, your 12. You know, that's what the good runners in the National Football League, they have the patience, they have the confidence, and that's, and I said the runners, but the line does, and the offensive coordinator does too. At no point do they panic and deviate from their plan going into that particular game.
Yeah, and again, I felt bad for Isaiah Crowell. 5 carries for 14 yards. He had the nice 13-yard run, the one with a stiff arm. Second week, he always showed a good stiff arm. But he had 16 yards after contact again. So he is, again, on average, getting hit behind the line of scrimmage. And before the last run, he was at 4 carries for 18 yards, which was a very healthy 4.5 a pop. And then his last carry, he literally got hit as he took the ball for a 4-yard loss.
Yeah.
So he ended up at 5 for 14. Terrence West actually benefited from some holes. He had 11 rushes for 42 yards, 24 yards after contact. So at least he was getting about 1.5 yards down the field before taking contact on his rushes.
And one key factor, and I know it's very evident for any football fan, especially a Browns fan, I loved what I saw out of Terrence West. I love some of his moves, but it's, I need one move, bro.
Get north
like, make
and
one
south.
Guy miss and get north and south. You can't make everybody on the defense miss trying to go backwards. You know, there was times where he'd be 3-4 yards into the rush and break backwards and then break backwards again for a two-yard gain. You know, it's
correct.
Like, get your yards, dude. Roll out of a tackle or run a guy over, which I love out of Crow. You know, the physicality that he runs with, which is why he still technically, in my mind, personally gets the nod. I love that about him. But run a dude over. You know, you can't make everybody miss. Not in this league.
You can't make everybody miss, especially with the speed. And even Johnny, we saw that with Johnny.
Yeah.
We'll get into the quarterbacks in a second. But one thing I wanted to talk about, again, the rush defense of the Browns I thought was excellent. And when you look at the stats, it gets – the Tyrod Taylor had 4 for 41. Take those 4 for 41 away. The running backs of that team had 25 carries for 40 yards.
Right.
So that was good. The majority of that between the tackles, they did a good job. I thought setting the edge was clearly a point of emphasis, and they did that as well. You had Scott Solomon get sucked in on one read option, but other than that, Paul Kruger stayed home, and that made a big play on the reverse.
Yes,
he stayed home.
Yep.
That was good. He got the sack. And I thought the second team of Nate Orchard and Armani Bryant looked very good. Nate Orchard made a massive jump from the first preseason game to the second.
He did.
And that was very encouraging.
And he has to.
He had to.
The one thing that I will speak about from a football standpoint is when you take all those things into account, the statistics that you just talked about, what, 25 rushes for how many yards? 40 yards? Something of that sort. What I did not like was our defender's reaction to a play-action pass.
Okay.
Meaning,
talk about that.
Meaning we still thought it was going to be run, you know, and we came up to make that play, which allowed their okay average playmakers to get into open field or to create that space because of our then reaction. If we know we're that good up front, you know, and that's from the linebackers and the safeties, you know, there's no reason to sit on these guys. You know, if you're taking their run game away, and I know we didn't game plan, is I just like to see a better reaction to pass when it is, in fact, play action pass. You know, because then, you know, there was time, I mean, Tremont Williams got beat on some throws. You know, there were some throws, you know, inside, you know, and some of it was later in the game. But I just like to see our reaction to play action pass be just a little bit sharper, especially once you've manhandled a team up front the way we did.
Yes, and that's my point. And people are going to say, okay, those running backs were terrible. And they were right off the street. But don't forget, last year, C.J. Anderson was basically an undrafted free agent for Denver. When you have, when your line is opening holes, it doesn't matter who's running the ball.
We don't have to feel the need to make an excuse. Like, who was out there is who's out there. We can't control that. This was scheduled a year ago that we're going to play the Bills in the preseason, okay? Whether, you know, Obama was in uniform playing for the Bills or a female football player was out there, the Browns can't control that. All they can do is do what they do against what's out there.
Yes, that is the truth. And we bring in the third member of our team here on Friday. The Kid is with us. The Kid, overall, we'll just start with your quick general take on what you saw from the Browns.
I really liked what I saw in the third quarter. I thought that was before garbage time, and I really liked the way that Johnny showed up. That said, let's ease off. And you hear all these national guys, and you see these national guys on Twitter that 15 minutes ago were saying Johnny Manziel is the worst pick in the world, and now they're saying we have a quarterback controversy. Let's ease off on that. McCown will be fine. Overall, I was pleased. I mean, Buffalo has a really, really good defense, so it doesn't surprise me that our first team struggled a bit.
Buffalo has a great defensive front, but you talk about Johnny Manziel. This is the play. Okay, first of all, he made two plays that I thought were unbelievable. The one where he rolled left and found Jennings deep on the backside post. Great throw. Not a lot of quarterbacks in the league make that throw, sprinting dead left like that. The second one, and the one that really got me excited, was the touchdown to Shane Winn, and here's why. Johnny Manziel is a guy who last year would get to the top of his drop, didn't climb the pocket, and once he started to scramble, his eyes would not stay down the field. His eyes would drop onto the rush. He'd look for running lanes. On that particular play, he got to the top of his drop, shuffled a little bit, gave a little Tony Romo shoulder shake, and then stepped up in the pocket and threw a strike to Shane Winn. So he not only did he do something he didn't do last year, climbing the pocket, he did that. He kept his eyes down the field, found the right play, the right mismatch, and then delivered an accurate football. I thought he made a lot of very good, decisive throws. He continues to look calm and comfortable in the pocket. And I think Johnny Manziel, what do you want to see? Growth. I think if this injury to Josh McCown, let's say that keeps him out of week three, I don't know that it will, this finger injury. Even if it doesn't, I want to see Johnny get some time with the ones, not because there's a quarterback controversy. Josh McCown's the starter, but just to see his progress.
From an evaluation standpoint.
Yeah,
and also to have him ready for if Josh McCown gets injured in the regular season, that he's seen some first team reps. I don't have a problem with that whatsoever. And another play that I really liked of his was, won't show up in the stat sheet, but there was one play where he was scrambling and it looked like he was ready to throw some idiotic pass and he took the sack. And I think that's growth too. Like, okay, live to play another day.
And it's smart, and that's part of his development. I also thought the play on the last drive where you ended up with the illegal lineman down the field was a great scramble and made a great throw to Bibbs, who made a fantastic catch with the defender draped all over him.
Bibbs. Let's talk about a little bit of Bibbs.
Bibbs, very good after the catch.
He's great after
very good hands. I will say this for all the Bibbs Hausler talk that we've been doing and a lot of people have been calling up. When Gary Barnes got hurt, Hausler went in. We didn't see Bibbs until the second half. And Hausler had a nice accounting of himself in this game. Three catches, got open, looked better, looked a little bit more confident. I thought that Bibbs, though, continues to stand out. And I'll tell you what stood out also like a sore thumb. Vince Maley's hands are problematic.
Yeah, they are.
I think is it possible a fourth-round pick doesn't make the team?
Yes.
I think it's definitely possible.
I mean, because just start going down the numbers games, and I know everybody wants to kill our receivers, but I actually think that we have a fair amount of receivers at that same level that it's going to be tough to decide who the last couple receivers on the roster are.
Yeah.
Well, right now, you would think, okay, Bo, Hartline, Hawkins, Gabriel.
For sure.
Benjamin,
Marlon Moore.
Yeah.
For sure, because think about this.
Marlon Moore's got, I don't count him as a receiver, but I guess.
Specialist, he's a receiver. Pryor, maybe. And Maley was the one we always had in there. So it was possible that they could go as high as eight at the receiver position, although Marlon Moore is a specialist.
You're not going eight.
But as a special
what
teams
about
guy.
Mr. Glenville?
Shane Wynn
Practice
with a nice
squad.
Touchdown. I think Jennings. I think Lenz is falling.
Yes.
I think Jennings and Wynn are leapfrogging Lenz.
Your Taco Bell is
Taco
a little
Bell
bit more
is,
likely
yes,
today.
Yes, it is getting
Lenz
heated.
Lenz is not on the roster. No chance.
No, no chance. As I said, 0%. As a special teams guy, you saw last night, at least I saw last night, the importance of Marlon Moore on the one where they had this backup gunners in and he boomed it.
Yep.
And they just weren't down
out-kicked
there.
His coverage.
And he
yeah.
outkicked his coverage. With Moore and Bademosi, you're not going to outkick your coverage very often.
No, you're not. And it's huge. And it plays a huge role. And I had an opportunity to, you know, to chit-chat for a quick second with Chris Tabor down in the lunchroom. And I asked about Shane Wynn. I go, stretch one cut. That's the way you do it. That's the way you make the big plays. And he's like, yeah, kid's a good returner. He said, yeah. And then he said the other one, he tried to outrun, you know, everybody at the edge, and you just get corralled.
Yeah,
you just
got to
put
work.
Your cleats in the ground. There's only a few people. Devin Hester might be the only guy who can do something like that. But even still, a lot of his returns came on that stretch one cut. But
yes.
Significant, you know, when and that's what I've always talked about as the good teams in the National Football League have their backups playing special teams. These are guys that are all in and responsibly sound when it comes to playing their role on offense or defense, but know what keeps them in the National Football League until their opportunity is to start will be their play on special teams. They'll play, you know, a guy like Justin Gilbert, a guy like Johnson Bademosi will never play cornerback in the National Football League ever in a live game rep unless he's the last guy that you have to have
covered.
I hope
Justin Gilbert gets there
at
some point.
My whole point is, he's going to play all 26 reps on every special teams, and he's going to have a sprinkling of tackles and an assist and have an impact in some way positively for your football team, and you need those guys.
Yeah, that's what Marlon and Bademosi are for this team. I thought, again, Johnny's development, very good to see. I was still a little bit – I know it's a good defensive front. I thought the offensive line, I still didn't see as much as I would have liked from the offensive line. I thought the defensive line was very good. You saw, I thought, on a lot of those third downs, the lack of depth in the secondary where they were able to convert on that first drive.
Well, just the way I wasn't even evaluating the pass defense as much as I was evaluating the run defense and the pass rush. And I was pleased with the pressure we got. And I think, listen, if you throw – your starting corners back there, you know, we don't have our top three corners were all out last night.
And a safety.
Yeah, and a safety. I mean, if, you know, in top four, I guess, if you consider Justin Gilbert top four. But I was really happy with the pressure we got on the quarter. Finally, I mean, that's going to be a key. We got to keep getting the pressure on the quarterback.
Got to do it. And you got to be able to do it without manufacturing it so much. And I thought the first unit, you got a couple blitzes, and that was the way that they got in there. Kruger with a nice sack, obviously. The second unit, though, when they had Armani Bryant and Nate Orchard on the two ends, they were generating a ton of pressure. And you had Billy Wynn, Jamie Meter, and Xavier Cooper kind of collapsing the pocket from the interior. And I was very pleased with what I saw from Nate Orchard. Strength, speed, and he was in on every play.
I agree. And I thought that, you know, while Xavier Cooper might have, from a statistical standpoint, have the two sacks that all came because of the outside pass rush forced the passer to try to make a throw, step up in the pocket, and then Xavier escapes his blocker and makes the play right there and gets the guy to the ground. So yeah,
but he's definitely earning playing time in the regular season.
Oh, right, there's now. No doubt, and he has to play for this football team.
No doubt in my mind, he's got to. And I think that you're going to start to see in pass rushing situations. I wouldn't be surprised if they find a way to get Kruger, Armonte, and Nate Orchard out there. at the same time. I would love to see those three with, say, Shelton and Starks or Shelton and Dez Bryant pushing and just go after the quarterback.
What you need to find in that situation is who can do it from a from an inside linebacker position, if that makes sense. Because I know at times when we got really good and we were trying to scheme Sean Merriman into one-on-one situations where, you know, myself or another linebacker would be the sacrificial lamb, but you get the Merriman running back, the Merriman, tight end, the Merriman guard in space one-on-one, and you'll take that, as I've said.
And then it's lights out.
But that's situation. In that kind of position group of guys that you talked about having on the field at the same time is – you can't have them all with their hand on the ground. So one of those guys has to emerge from, an orchard, lining up as if he's next to Dansby in a two-point stance as an inside linebacker, but then he moves around pre-snap to get into his, his pass rush, scheme position to make a move towards being an active pass rusher on the play.
I think it's got to be Orchard out of all those guys. I just don't see Kruger. I mean, Kruger, I think he's great. Maybe great's a strong word, but he's good at what he does.
Yeah.
I don't see him having the athleticism, and I think that maybe Orchard would have to fill that role.
He certainly does. So somebody just sent me a picture of the crow run where he lost 4 yards, and it dumbfounds me, but it literally looks like the ball was snapped. Johnny's turning around to hand it to Crow, or I'll show it to you guys. And I'm going to retweet this so everybody can see it. It looks like the Browns offensive linemen are standing up to like the ball was just literally snapped, but every Bills lineman is already 2 yards behind them.
It's like a screen pass.
I don't understand how that's possible in run blocking. The second team offensive line, let me just say, massive concern. Michael Bowie has been unbelievably unimpressive. Ryan Seymour, the PEDs are not helping. And I'll be honest, I want to see more out of Cameron Irving.
Yeah.
Cam Irving, and maybe it's tough to be good when you're surrounded.
It is. And I've had that situation before where I thought, I was budding and playing. I was playing in packages on defense, a la Christian Kirksey and roles like that. I wasn't a starter, but I was playing actively in roles, so I was technically a backup. So when we were in base defense, I'd go out there with some of the guys that were playing as a two in the backup, practice. And it was frustrating to me when I would get reps with the ones, everything is so clear and it's executed properly and there's no MEs. And then you get in with the twos and guys are, look, what was the call again? And the ball snapped. And you're like, dude, when you do that to me, you're exposing me too.
I think that's it, especially with the offensive line that has to all work in sync. I think it'll crystallize for Irvin when he gets to decide when they decide what his one position is going to be, if it's going to be one position, and he could really focus on that. I mean, I don't know if he'll beat out Greco, but
it doesn't look like it right
now. Greco's had a good camp.
Yeah, Greco. When it's interesting, I try to is this a concern? Joel Bitonio was taken 35th overall last year. He was a second round pick, and he came in and he was the left guard from day one.
Yep.
And was the guy and went on to have a great rookie
season.
Right,
but they only put him at guard. They're putting Irvin all over the place. They almost, in a good offensive line, you almost need a sixth man. And maybe they feel like Irvin is a better sixth man than Greco. So leave Greco at the guard. And if he struggles, then we could bring in Irvin there. But otherwise, Irvin can back up center, tackle, and guard.
And that's what he's here for. He is the jack of all trades. You want him to be a master of something, though. And I think that it is right guard, at least at this point in his career. Maybe he will slide over somewhere else. All right, when we come back, we're going to open up the phone lines, 216-578-0850. We've got a lot to get through in the show. I want us to be able to go down, go back together and go through the position groups, because I thought there were a lot of guys who had some nice performances, a lot of guys who were concerning. But I thought specifically... there were guys who really are starting to make the case for why they belong to be on this team, or at least on the practice squad with some of those lesser-known players. Took advantage of opportunities last night, at least certainly in the secondary, and we'll talk about that. So we'll get your phone calls, 216-578-0850, Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford, when we come back. Change my mind, not intentionally. I know it's hard to hear you say it, but I can't bear to stay. And I just know, I know, I know, I know.